I consider myself a real daughter of this house. I've been in this church for 12 years, and this move, we've been basically talking about our new building for that entire 12 years. Like, I don't remember a time in this church where we weren't super aware that God was taking us somewhere new and doing something new. And so as it started to look a bit more like a reality, I've been really praying for our church and for the significance of this thing that, you know, gets talked about all the time actually happening. And one thing that I have prayed and prayed over our church and over the BAT, I don't want to say BAT team, the T stands for team, you did it before, the team, the BAT people. Isn't that great, the BAT people? Because I think Leonie's on there, so they can't even be the Batman. the BAT folk. I've been praying that God will direct their steps and will direct our path as a church. And so the phrase that comes into my prayers over and over again is, God, direct our path. And that comes from a verse in Proverbs 3, which says, trust in Jehovah with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your path. Okay, so that's my message for today. Trust God and he will direct your path. That's it. I told you it was short, Dave. Dave was worried about time. I was like, no, it's a really short message. And that's it. Well, and it actually kind of is, but I do want to put some understanding around that really great piece of advice. How am I doing with my mic, Warren? It's okay. My one mission is to not hold the microphone in front of my mouth tonight. I'm really bad for it. That's what reminded me that you were doing it. Okay, so I really want to talk to us tonight about what trust is and how it's developed. And my message title is The Hypothesis of Trust. And I'll get to that in a minute. So it's a message tonight about how we need to be with God, but also how we need to be with each other as a church as we go on to this new season. Because I don't know if you guys have read much of the Old Testament. I've been doing this Bible in a year thing that's taken me 3 years, but that's fine. So I've been reading a lot of the Old Testament because there is a lot of it. And one thing that I have learned is that whenever God's people try to get from one place to another, they go through some stuff. They go through some stuff. And so we need to be a church that really trusts each other if we are going to get from one place to another. So trust. This is a definition from Charles Feltman, he's a social researcher and a business coach at really high-level organisations across the United States. And he says that trust is choosing to make that which is important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. Something that is important to you, vulnerable to the actions of someone else. So that's from he's a really leading psychological researcher and cognitive coach. And I want you to think about tonight the person that you trust the most in the world. The person that you trust more than anyone else. I want you to picture that person and I want you to imagine yourself telling that person something that you've never told anyone before. This is really hard for me to do. Not because I don't trust people, but because there's just nothing that I haven't told people. Like, I can't keep a secret. It's not in me. But I'm sure you guys can do that. And so picture yourself telling that trusted person something you've never told anyone before. It might be something embarrassing that you once did, something you did that you are really ashamed of. Like, anyone ever... I found my son's first graffiti this week. And he hasn't told us about it yet, but we both know about it. We just found the word "the" written in chalk on the inside of our linen closet. And I can just picture him getting this bit of chalk and just going, oh, I have so much power, and running to the linen closet and writing the word "the" because he's just learning to write at school and just being like, I'm such a rebel, thank you. Thank you for helping my vocabulary there so I didn't say anything naughty on the stage. But anyway, maybe it's something like that. Maybe you wrote something on a wall somewhere. And I want you to picture the reaction of that person as you tell them. And I reckon that the chances are you have a pretty accurate idea of how that person would react. That it wouldn't be a surprise to you how they would react. Because trust is a hypothesis and it's an educated guess based on what you already know about someone. So you are telling that person something deeply personal about yourself, because you already have an idea about how they will respond, because you have a bank of memories or a bank of knowledge about that person that enables you to hypothesise what their reaction will be and hypothesise that you can actually trust them with that thing. Okay, next thing. I want you to picture the moment you started to trust that person. When did you decide that that hypothesis was viable? I'm being very scientific tonight. Chances are you can't remember. Am I right? Can't remember the moment that you decided to trust someone? Yeah. Because we think that trust is built in really big, significant moments, don't we? We think when we think about the people that we trust, we think about them being there for us in the really hard times, really big moments. But that's not when trust is built. Trust is built around things that are so normal and so insignificant. And I'm going to borrow a story now. It's going to be from Brené Brown, and Tennille's going to laugh because it's 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. Because I could just tell the story, but I'm a teacher, and whenever we can get someone else to do the talking for us, we do that. So I'm going to show a video of her telling this story. And this story is actually where God started speaking to me about this message, and I didn't know it at the time, but I went into my principal's office. She's obsessed with Brené Brown, so this happens a lot. And I always try to weave it back to the Bible because I know that a lot of Brené Brown's stuff is actually birthed out of her relationship with God. And I had some problems. My grade 7 girls were being mean to each other and I was trying to figure out a way through it. And she goes, don't worry about any of that. Look at this video. I was like, well, that's helpful. Thanks, Libby. But, you know, here we are. So thank you, Libby. So this video is brought to you by Brené Brown and Dr. Elizabeth Robinson. Hopefully there's sound.
One day my daughter, Ellen, came home from school. She was in third grade. And the minute we closed the front door, she literally just started sobbing and slid down the door until she was just kind of a heap of crying on the floor. And of course it scared me. And I said, what's wrong, Ellen? What happened? What happened? And she pulled herself together enough to say, something really hard happened to me today at school. And I shared it with a couple of my friends during recess. And by the time we got back into the classroom, everyone in my class knew what had happened. And they were laughing and pointing at me and calling me names. And it was so bad, and the kids were being so disruptive, that her teacher even had to take marbles out of this marble jar. And the marble jar in the classroom is a jar where if the kids are making great choices together, the teacher adds marbles. If they're making not great choices, the teacher takes out marbles. And if the jar gets filled up, there's a celebration for the class. And so she said, it was one of the worst moments of my life. They were laughing and pointing, and Ms. Balkan, my teacher, kept saying, I'm going to take marbles out, you know, and she didn't know what was happening. And she looked at me, and she, just with this face that is just seared into my mind, and said, I will never trust anyone again. And my first reaction, to be really honest with you, was damn straight. You don't tell anybody anything but your mama. Yeah, right? That's it. I mean, you just tell me. And when you grow up and you go off to school, mama will go too. I'll get a little apartment. And the other thing I was thinking, to be quite honest with you, is I will find out who those kids were. And while I'm not going to beat up a 9-year-old, I know their mamas. That's the place you go to. And I'm like, how am I going to explain trust to this third grader in front of me? So I took a deep breath and I said, Ellen, trust is like a marble jar. She said, what do you mean? And I said, you share those hard stories and those hard things that are happening to you with friends who over time you've filled up their marble jar. They've done thing after thing after thing where you're like, I know I can share this with this person. Does that make sense? And that's what Ellen said. Yes, that makes sense.
So I just want to borrow the idea of the marble jar, and I wanted to set it up that way so that, I didn't get the story wrong. And I got a little bit of a break. So in that full version of that, which I definitely recommend everybody go and watch, it's called The Anatomy of Trust, and it's fantastic and really research-based and really good. But Ellen tells her mum, her mum asks Ellen, do you have any marble jar friends? And Ellen says yes, and they talk about how people actually put those marbles in her jar. And the examples that she gives are things like, oh, you know, we were at a soccer game and my friend pointed out, oh, your oma and oppa are up there. They've come to watch. And that was a marble jar moment. She got a marble for that. You know, she greeted her family dog when they came in as if it was her own and gave it a pat and remembered its name. That's a marble jar moment. Like, they are the most small, everyday, you wouldn't even think about it. And that's how trust is built. And as I watched this, I realised that, you know, trust is learned in the moments that are not supposed to teach us anything. We learn to trust in moments that are not designed for teaching. And while trust matters when the stakes are high, it is really built when the stakes are low. And that's my first point tonight, is that trust is built when the stakes are low. So a lot of my marble jar relationships are in this church. And I think that that is one of the greatest things about the church, is that these are where some of our marble jar relationships come from. And there are people that I trust deeply here today. There are a bunch of people in this church who have received phone calls from me when the stakes are really, really high. Okay, so I'm going to tell a story about Katie. It's Katie's finest moment. This may be the reason she became a police officer, I feel. At one point, Simon's from New Zealand. You guys didn't know that. He's from New Zealand. And his grandfather, who'd been sick for a long time, passed away. And we had Eleanor, and she was teeny weeny. She was 3 months old. And so we're trying to scramble together to get to New Zealand at the end of the week for a funeral. And I just want to point out that at the time, old mate was a travel agent. Okay, so just to give you a bit of context, he forgot that he got all our tickets and everything organised, that was all fine. He forgot that his daughter existed. He knew she existed. He forgot she was a person and therefore needed a passport. So we are seriously 4 days out from going to another country. We need to be there by a certain date because it's for a funeral. And we're trying to get everything together for the passport office. So get all this done. Get it all done. Everything in. Oh, actually, we need to cite one of your passports in order to get this thing signed off and sent away. So we're in town, both of us at the passport office with Eleanor, without the passport. And I've gone, passport office closes in 45 minutes or something like that. And I've called Katie, who's in Lauderdale, which is pretty close to 45 minutes from town sometimes. And Katie has broken into our house, braved our German Shepherd. Katie's afraid of German Shepherds. We have one. She's gone straight past that thing. She's broken in through our back window. She's rifled through Simon's very, very not organised filing system, found a passport, jumped in the car, has gone screaming through peak hour traffic. She's pulled up at the lights. I'm standing at the traffic light. She's like thrown the passport out the window and I've caught it and run in and got the passport and we made the funeral. So this is Katie Jason Bourne Swift over here. Yeah. And I like to think that she never would have become a police officer without that professional experience that I was able to provide. So you're welcome, Katie. But you know what? That moment is not the reason that I trust Katie, because my trust in Katie is actually what enabled that moment to happen. I never would have called her if I didn't already think, I don't let just anyone break in through my back window. Okay, a lot of people, but not just anyone. When I picture my own marble jar, I think about like McDonald's family boxes with Josh and Katie after our old 6 p.m. service. And I think about like lots of beach hangs and barbecues with Lance and Rachel. I think about impromptu dinner invitations from Warren and Kathy. I think about this one time that we were driving past Dave and Alex's house and the fuse blew in our windscreen wipers and it was pouring with rain. And while Dave was trying to get to church to preach, he instead came out and fixed our windscreen wipers so that we could get to church. There are so many things, 100 coffee dates with Claire, a million beach Bruny Island adventures with Jemima, cleaning the kitchen with Penny Burnett after she purchased my services in a slave auction while I was a youth leader many years ago, scraping grime off her kitchen cupboards. Those are the things that are in my marble jar, and those are the things that my trust in this house is built on. And you know what? None of those were planned to teach me to trust. Nobody planned to do that to teach me to trust them. Trust is built when people are just being themselves. It's how it happens. And so now when there's a crisis, I know that I can call any of those people. And I just have this really strong feeling that we need to be putting some marbles in each other's jars. Not when the stakes are high, because it's too late then, but in the everyday moments. And I've been here for 12 years, so I've had a lot of time for people to put those marbles in my jars. But you might be sitting here and thinking that when I look around these people, my jar's pretty empty. And it might be because you're new, or it might be because we haven't done a good enough job of putting marbles in your jar yet. But I have this really strong sense that we need to be open to the little moments that put marbles in each other's jars. You guys know those moments where God speaks really, really clearly and it's really obvious what you should do? Yeah, well, trust isn't built there. That's really good. That's great. But trust is not built there. It's actually being leveraged off. When God speaks really clearly and gives a directive, he's leveraging off the trust that we already have. So I mentioned before that I've been doing my Bible in a year over 3 years. I'm nearly finished. I'm 94% of the way through. I'm so excited. Also, I'm going to feel a little bit lost after that, I think. But honestly, for a lot of that chronological reading, it has really felt to me like God is saying nothing, like I'm just reading it and then I tick the box and I go on to the next day, 3 days later. And I say to God, what's the point of reading 5 chapters of the Bible a day if I can't hear what you're teaching me? And he said, you're just observing my faithfulness. Like, I'm not giving you a directive, you're just observing my faithfulness. You need, when I speak to you, you're going to need to know who I am. And you learn who I am by just being together. And so we'll never trust God if we don't just observe his faithfulness. That's why he tells us to be still and know that I am God. We need to know who he is when he's just being himself. The same way that I need to know who Josh and Katie are when we're just eating McDonald's, so that I can call her when I need Jason Bourne. And that means looking for him. Everyone's going to know this verse, but it's so good. It's Jeremiah 29, verses 11 to 13, and it says, For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. It's that seeking that enables us to trust God. Seeking him with all of our heart, it's only built in relationship. Trust can only be built in relationship. It's in daily inviting God to be part of what you're doing that day and actually opening yourself to be part of what he's doing that day. And as we listen to him and we abide in him, we find that our marble jars are full. We start to learn who he is when he's just being himself. And he starts to put those marbles in our jars. What we find is, as it says in Psalm 117, verse 2, great is his love toward us, and the faithfulness of the Lord endures forever. We only learn that in relationship. Okay, so point number two. Point number one, trust is built when the stakes are low. Point number two, trust matters when the stakes are high. Trust does not matter to us when we're building it. In small, everyday moments, trust is not important. And you can't build it when you need it. It has to already be there. I always like to say you can't build a bunker in a hurricane. It's too late. I'm going to read a huge chunk of scripture now. Well, it's not a huge chunk, but it's a fair bit of my page is yellow. So, yeah, it's a pretty big chunk. But I'm going to read it because it's good. And it's the story, part of the story of Noah in Genesis 6. It says, this is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I always wonder if it was meant to be like Jason or something and there was just a lisp involved. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. I'm silly tonight, I'm sorry. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. Make a roof for it, leaving below the roof an opening 1 cubit high all around. Put a door on the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has the breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and them. And Noah did everything, just as God commanded him. Okay, so I talked before about those times where God speaks really clearly and he makes it really obvious what he wants from us. This is one of those times, and it is crazy. So I hope personally that God never tells me to go and start building a boat and collecting animals, because that sounds nuts. Hey, Noah, go build a boat. Yes, good. I like boat. Now fill it up with animals. Okay. So, speaking of marvels, Noah is considering perhaps that God has lost all of his at this point. However, there are two key things that bookend this crazy command. I think we can all agree that the command itself is really full on and would have got Noah surprised. You would at least never think that you'd made that one up. You would know it was God. There are the things that bookend it, though, which show us something about what it means to trust. It starts with, Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. He spent his days doing those little things with God, seeing who God was in the ordinary, walking faithfully with him. He had plenty of marble jar moments with God stocked up, so that when this big, significant, life-changing, world-changing command came, he didn't freak out and he didn't say no and he didn't run away. He knew he could trust God because of how the ordinary looked for him. His trust in God enabled obedience, because obedience is actually the measure of our trust. That's why trust matters when the stakes are high with God, because our obedience to him is the measure of whether or not we trust him. God is a God of relationship. He could make us obedient if he wanted to. He could make us. I mean, he makes the weather obey him. He makes the earth obey him. He could make us obey him so easily, but he actually chooses to do that through trust. Trust is the instrument that God uses. Relationship is the instrument he uses to accomplish his purpose as we learn to trust him. And that's why trust matters so much when the stakes are high. All right, number three, and this is the last point, is trust demands vulnerability. This is my third message in a row about vulnerability. I haven't got it yet, so I'm going to keep preaching until I understand it. Let's revisit that definition of trust. It's choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. And I want you to think back to those people that we thought of, the people that we trust the most. Chances are they didn't actually get those marbles in your jar without revealing some vulnerability of themselves. Chances are it was as you actually started to see who those people really were and what was going on beneath the surface for them that those marbles started to accumulate. Because we don't trust people who are not vulnerable with us. We just don't. It's not in us as people. Do you know that sometimes I have no idea what I'm doing at work? I'm a teacher for the people I haven't met yet. And actually, probably more accurately, sometimes I do know what I'm doing at work, and the rest of the time, I've got no idea. But I'm not going to go to the teacher who only ever talks about how fantastically successful and evidence-based and amazing their lesson plans are to ask for help. I just won't go to that person. I'm not going to approach, I talked about my principal already and I love her. I'm not going to approach her for advice, though, if I've never seen her go, oh, wow, I stuffed that one up. That did not go how I planned it to go. I actually need to know that other people on the team are a complete hot mess at times as well before I will reveal that I am a hot mess in my classroom. And we all know this. We all have this inbuilt fake meter where we can spot someone who's not being real with us, and we are straight away, we're putting that mask on. We're not going to reveal ourselves. And if you've watched the full version of that Anatomy of Trust presentation, you'll see that Brené Brown's research, which is some of the leading research around trust and vulnerability in the world, she actually identified some of those biggest trust-building moments, and it's things like people who attend funerals and cry at funerals and people who will ask for help. That's the biggest one, actually, is if you ask for help, that is a trust builder. And it seems so counterintuitive to us because we think that to be trustworthy, we actually need to be reliable and have everything together ourselves. But actually, for other people to consider us trusted, we need to get better at asking for help. But now, where does this leave us in our attempt to grow in our trust for God? Because obviously he has no weakness and he has no vulnerability, which is a really interesting point. We look at our weakness and our sin and we look at God's perfection, and it puts us back in that same old place of shame. We see the gap in between and we landed back in the midst of shame, and we get our fig leaves out in the Garden of Eden and we try to cover ourselves because we feel exposed. But you know what? God actually has a way through this as well, and I love this about him. I'm going to read to you from John 19, starting at chapter 22, and I think I'm reading from the Message. Am I reading from the Message, Megan? I don't know. Anyway, Megan will figure it out. When they crucified him, the Roman soldiers took his clothes and divided them up four ways, to each soldier a fourth. But his robe was seamless, a single piece of weaving. So they said to each other, let's not tear it up. Let's throw dice to see who gets it. This confirmed the scripture that said, they divided up my clothes among them and threw dice for my coat. The soldiers validated the scriptures. While the soldiers were looking after themselves, Jesus' mother, his aunt, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene stood at the foot of the cross. Jesus saw his mother and the disciple he loved standing near her. He said to his mother, woman, here is your son. Then to the disciple, here is your mother. From that moment, the disciple accepted her as his own mother. Jesus, seeing that everything had been completed so that the scripture record might also be complete, then said, I'm thirsty. A jug of sour wine was standing by. Someone put a sponge soaked with wine on a javelin and lifted it to his mouth. After he took the wine, Jesus said, it's done, complete. Bowing his head, he offered up his spirit. Can I have the band up, please? Jesus on the cross expressed vulnerability in all the ways that we understand what it means to be vulnerable. He was firstly exposed as the soldiers took his clothes. He was humiliated as he was paraded through Jerusalem. He was mocked and he was taunted and lots were cast for his clothing. He suffered grief, that expression of grief that we can't control, and we don't want to get that out in public. We don't want people to see us when we're in that place of grief. He suffered that in such a public way as he farewelled his mother and his closest friends. He expressed need as he said, I'm thirsty. And he accepted help as he was offered a drink. The ultimate vulnerability is surrender. And Jesus, the giver of life, the most powerful person who has ever walked on the earth, surrendered to death in order to make God accessible to humanity. We cannot come to trust a perfect God without looking at the vulnerability of the cross. Jesus came as a human, not just as a means to an end, not just as a way to create salvation because he needed to bear the sacrifice of humanity, but also to create a way for our shame and our vulnerability to be transformed and to be channeled into trust. God knows we can't trust without vulnerability. He invented trust. And so Jesus made himself vulnerable as the way to redeem us. He modeled that relationship between vulnerability and victory so perfectly because although he was not afraid to own shame, he was not afraid to take on brokenness and take it upon himself, just like we, by the way, have to own our stuff and bring it to the cross. He didn't stay there. He wasn't afraid to step into that. He wasn't afraid of the mess, but he didn't stay there. He didn't remain on the cross. He didn't remain exposed. He didn't remain humiliated or grief-stricken or in need. He rose from the grave. He got up. He got out of there. He got dressed. He embraced his friends. He went back into community. And he brought some good news. The resurrection life embraces vulnerability as part of the path to victory. We're not called to be vulnerable for the sake of vulnerability. It's not our identity to be grief-stricken or humiliated or in need. That's shame. When vulnerability becomes our identity, that's shame. That's not where we live. We embrace vulnerability on the path to victory. And I want to pray for people today. I know Dave would love to pray for people today who are actually ready to step out of that cave, to step out of some shame, to step out of some grief or humiliation. I want to pray for people who are ready to trust an almighty God whose faithfulness is enduring. I want to pray for people who feel like maybe there's not enough marbles in their jar and they need to strengthen their connections in the house with some other believers or with God. I want to leave you with the verse that we started with. Trust in Jehovah with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. Thank you, church.